Hi, and welcome to Jackie Winter Gives You the Business. I'm Jeremy Wartzman.
And I'm Bianca Bremham.
I'm Bianca.
And I'm Lara Chanbeka.
Jackie Winter Gives You the Business is a weekly podcast from the Jackie Winter Group. We're a creative production and representation studio based in Melbourne and New York City. This podcast is an opportunity for our two studios to come together each week and provide insight into the creative industry from our unique point of view as a bridge between clients and creatives. Using the internet as our lens, we hope to explore a variety of current events, opinions, and tools to provide thought-provoking conversation for anyone whose job it is to bring creative things to life. Remember, this is an enhanced podcast. If you listen to this using the Pocket Cast or Overcast podcatchers, you can directly link to the articles discussed here as well as to get enhanced visual content as we move along. For example, last week I posted a great shot of the extra gum tin, you know, to, yes.
Brilliant content.
I think people really needed to see that kind of visually to fully understand the whinge.
It helped me.
Thank you. And we also just got word that the popular player Castro now has added chapter support as well. So you can check that out there. This season, we're rolling out with our extended open tab segment that you know and love. This week, we'll be talking about some of the usual hot button issues, including the most hated email intro ever, unique ways to fund creative endeavors, and we also head into the uncanny valley to discuss virtual influencers. Much like our IRL Open Tabs events, which you can find out more about at opentabs.rodeo, we're digging deep into our JW network of amazing people to contribute their own link and thoughts to each episode. And today, we are delighted to welcome Georgia Perry to the studio as this week's special guest. Apart from being one of the brightest and boldest artists on the JW roster, Georgia is also a prolific designer and entrepreneur with her signature range of fashion accessories, most notably pins, which maybe many of you have seen or are wearing and are sold in retailers around the world. Georgia, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Hey, G-Pez. How you doing?
What's up?
It's so good to have you in here. We're very, very excited.
I'm excited too and also scared, but I'm pumped.
We're very scary. Jeremy is wearing his scream
mask. I've learned that.
That's true. It's my lucky podcast scream mask. That I like to put people at ease, as well as take 10 minutes just to record the intro, which I have to repeat over and over and over.
It's been a bumpy start, but we're getting there. Georgia, how are you?
I am so well.
You just got back from a trip?
I did. I've just been in China and Hong Kong, and it was berserk and beautiful and crazy and cool, and I want to go back.
What was the best thing you ate?
Good
question, Jeremy.
There was a lot. Like, we had a lot of work to do, so I wasn't like going too hard on street foods and
don't see why those two things.
Do you know what I mean? Like, exclusive. Yeah. It's like a risk. Like, when you travel, I'm so phobic about getting sick or not feeling well. So I don't really,
I've got that Mexican stomach of steel.
Oh my God, so good. And like, unless you're just chilling and you have nothing to do, it's a gamble. I can't ride off 2 or 3 days with a bug. Anyway, I didn't get sick, but I didn't eat anything too crazy. But everything we ate was great. Like, we had some business meetings and we got taken to lunches, and it's like a massive deal there, like stopping for a proper lunch. And it's, we're trying to do it now when we're home.
Amazing.
Well, Jeremy, how are you?
How am I?
Big question.
That's such a big question. I need to really, really think about it.
You okay?
I don't know. I think I'm okay. I think I'm fine.
You think you're okay? How's the recovery of the collarbone going?
Recovery of the collarbone's going good. It looks a bit, I mean, it just looks funny. I feel a bit, you know, I feel a bit weird. And also, like, I can't really.
It's probably all that metal in there.
Yeah, it is all that kind of metal. I do feel bionic, but no, I'm getting there. Thank you.
You're enhanced.
How are you?
I'm okay. I had just like one of those nights of like really weird dreams, and so I'm a bit like, I'm all over the place, but I'm good. I'm good. I'm excited to be here with you two. We're missing Bianca. We should mention that. Bianca is currently in transit on her way back to Melbourne. And so we're very, very excited to see her soon. But that does mean that she is not here with us today. And hence, you know, why Jeremy and I pretended to be her in the intro.
Well, I think we'll just move on straight into our links for this week. And I kind of am starting off with a piece from The Cut. What is The Cut? Where is it from? I don't know, but I thought this was a recent article. It is from 2016, but it's one of those things that I read and it just cut so deep with me that I felt like, oh, I need to talk about this. And we sort of touched upon this issue previously with I think it was a Vice article, which was all about these are things you need to kind of stop saying in your email. And I think because like sometimes I do feel like I am a professional emailer, like that is literally what I do.
Oh, 100%.
You're really good at it.
I'm really, really good at it. I think I've got it kind of down to an art, but this piece is all on the heading is it's time to stop writing I hope you're well in emails. And I am the number one offender here. I open probably 99% of my emails about this. And I think it's something that I really kind of struggle with. I mean, I think we talk so much about how writing is such a crucial part of being a producer and about, you know, maintaining a good professional relationship. And, you know, the author of this piece writes, "The expression has rendered itself so benign in its overuse that our brains are now programmed to ignore it, skipping directly to the point of the email, which, if the text, I hope you're well, is any indication, is probably a request for a favor." Now, not only does she kind of skewer the "I hope you're well" line, but she also kind of takes a scalpel to the sign off of "best," which I use as well. So this was a bit of a 1-2 punch for me. So I'm just kind of curious, before we delve into this more, are there kind of phrases that you guys are conscious of kind of overusing?
I mean, I think I'm more guilty of overusing like certain words, but none that I take huge issue with. I 100% agree with this article, and I personally never use "I hope you're well" unless like I really do not give a fuck about the person that I'm writing to. But if you guys ever receive "I hope you're well" from me, you know there's something
it's
up.
Over.
Yeah. But I have no issues with the word "best." Who cares about the sign off? The sign off is irrelevant. The message is over. Who cares? I think about it in the sense of like normal, regular human speech. It's like, I would never say "I hope you're well" to like a friend as I'm greeting them, or just anyone as I'm greeting them. "I hope you're well." But you know, you can say "bye" later, "see ya," whatever. No one cares about the ending.
Sometimes I'm talking to somebody, the same person, like 4 or 5 times in the course of a day. There's a lot of back and forth. And still there's that thing where like the third call, "how you going?" You
know, yeah.
Like, I don't know. It's like, yeah, you got to kind of answer and have that kind of conversation. I don't know. But Georgia, what about you? Are there any kind of phrases that you typically kind of fall back on or are guilty of using too much?
I don't know if it's falling back on, but I looked back through my sent folder when you guys sent me this article. And literally all of my emails start with, "I'm so sorry with the delay in getting back to you." It's like, I'm constantly trying to catch up on emails. And I feel like I try and do have a friendly edge. And like you're saying, Jeremy, it's like, I don't want to feel like a different human in like online versus offline. Like I try and drop in like a "hey dude" or something I would normally say in real life. But that said, if it's just business, I hope you've been well. Is that allowed? Because I've definitely been saying that as well.
Well, I don't know. I think like email has replaced so many of our regular forms of communication, and it's often the main or only way that we'll actually communicate with someone. So yeah. I think we do have to be really careful about how we use it as this sort of tool for interaction and consider it, as I was saying, in the same way as we would in-person speech to some extent. I mean, I think this holds true even more so in what we do, as our work relies so heavily on forming relationships, and that's probably the case for a lot of people, and I think for yourself too, Georgia.
Totally.
Yeah, and I think like the greeting is the one area in an email where it's accepted that you can show a bit of your personality in business anyway, you know, and I think it's really important to take that opportunity to build a relationship or to reinforce to the person on the other end that you're a human being with real life emotions, because the rest of it tends to be quite to the point, and you need to be efficient. But that little sliver of a greeting is where you're allowed to sort of have some sort of personality.
Some humanity.
Totally. And like, I think like for me, I don't use "I hope you're well." I have others that I reuse over and over again with new people. And so it's just as easy as writing "I hope you're well," but it appears slightly less, I don't know, robotic.
Also, I guess the good thing about "I hope you're well" is you're not posing a question. You're like, it's a statement. It's like, I'm not asking how you are. Don't tell me. I don't have time. You know, it's just like, get it done, take the edge off, and then we're into it.
I agree. I mean, I tend to fall back a lot on the like, "hope this week is treating you well."
That's
or
cool.
Like, "hope you've got a great weekend planned for yourself," if it's like Thursday or Friday.
Again, not questions.
Yeah, exactly. Or like if it's end of the day, I tend to do the like, "oh, I hope you've escaped from the office by now," or like, you know, or if it's someone that, you know, I know their work, I like to sort of say like, "oh, I saw this out in the wild, it looked fantastic," or, you know, just like a little bit of a something to open up.
I corresponded with a friend a few years ago, and their tactic was, I don't know how they did this, but I think every day they went into their email settings and changed what their name was. So basically they changed her last name. So every email you got from them, the sender would read a bit of a statement of that day. So it would say, you know, instead of saying "John Doe," it would say, "John is having a nice day," or "John really likes," you know,
it
actually was pretty cute.
Yeah, that's like cute.
Speaking of alternatives to this kind of intro, the author posits, "sometimes I like to comment on how hot it is outside. Are you surviving this disgusting heat wave? Sometimes I like to throw in some current culture commentary. Did you catch Merman Phelps' race last night?" Who's Merman Phelps?
Yeah, I got confused by this as well. I thought his name was Merman Phelps, but they're calling Michael Phelps a merman.
Oh, me too.
Merman Phelps.
He sounds exotic.
I thought, Merman, good dog name. Anyway, continue.
So, yeah, the author's proposing these as alternatives. alternatives, but I don't know, like, I sort of don't like them because it kind of forces the recipient to do more work by then answering a question. I think her final suggestion is the best. If the thought of leaving out introductory pleasantry at all makes you uncomfortable, an exclamation point in your greeting should do the trick. As nearly as hollow as "I hope you're well," but takes up less than half the space. Fun. How would you react to this? And I think what she's saying is, instead of, like, basically, you know, you just write kind of, you know, "Hi, John," exclamation point, and then you kind of go right into the thing. So getting rid of it completely.
That's what I tend to do after the first couple of, like, at least the first email, you know, but I still think that first email should have some sort of pleasantry. And I kind of hate the word pleasantry, but I guess that's what it is. Like, I don't know. I know you guys both mentioned that you don't like the question thing. And I think it depends who you're writing to. But I think that if you feel that this is a huge ask of you to, like, very briefly respond to this and, like, engage in a little bit of banter, then, like, that's a bit shit. You know?
Yeah, like, it's like if you're saying to me, "Oh, are you surviving the heat wave?" Then I come back and I say, "Yeah, are you?" And then we just go back and forth until we die. It's like, when does it end?
But then it's up to the other person to just be like, I also often don't really expect people to answer those things. Like, it is just adding some personality. It's a token. Again, like, it's the same. I mean, it's a token as "I hope you're well," but it's a token that means something rather
than. It's true. And it's a bit more topical. You know, it's a bit more current.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I actually really appreciate when people do that, when people ask a bit of a question, try to, because, like, I actively then feel the effort that they're making to engage with me. And I think that can go a long way. Like, when I do this in emails, as I said, I don't really expect people to respond necessarily, but it is just a bit of a more personal way to interact with someone. And I think you have to remember, you're not just writing to a computer, you're not writing code, like, you're writing to another human.
Humans. It's easy to forget.
But I suppose there's kind of an area here that speaks to a power dynamic as well. And I think that often I found that my tone completely changes. Like, if I, like, whether I'm trying to get something from a client, whereas, like, yeah, like, you're,
oh, totally.
And then, you know, or if you kind of have leverage in the situation and you kind of want to, I don't know, like, you know, project some kind of strength, you're going to cut those kind of niceties out.
Oh, it's so
and
true.
It's the same in real life, though.
Also, like, I've read a bunch of really interesting articles about how women do it more so than men. And sometimes, especially in, like, a really business email or something to, like, a landlord or whatever, I go back and I strip out some nice stuff because I find that my language sometimes is very, like, "Would it be okay if I'm just wondering if," and sometimes it's like, "No, like, I need something done. Can you please just do it?" Like, you need to, I kind of check myself with that. Sometimes I think I'm too nice, you know?
I completely agree. And I think those things are really important to strip back and to be really, like, clear and precise and to not sort of second guess yourself or force yourself into that position of inferiority just through your language. But I do think there is a difference between those sorts of things and making an effort to actually, like, engage and relate with someone. And I think that can be a really beneficial thing to both you and the person on the other end.
It's true, especially because, like, I have so many clients and stuff that I've literally never met in real life. And yeah. Email's all you have. So,
and you don't have to, like, go out and be their best friends and find out their, like, kids' names and shit. You just, yeah. like a little, like, I don't know, let's say you know that they like cricket or something, just a quick little, like, "Oh, did you see the game on the week?" I don't know. I really can't talk about cricket. But, you know, just like a little something to show that you are invested in them as a person to some, like, beyond the business transaction,
it's
beyond,
true.
Like, "I need something from you, you need something from me," I think is useful. And it just makes, like, work less shit.
It's a real fine line. I think a lot of these things go back to the email charter that we were talking about before. Mm. I think we'll link to that as well, just to put some additional context there. But look, I like that people are kind of writing about it. It gives me pause. Like, you know, it's making me kind of think a bit more as well, just to, I guess, you know, to put more kind of meaning in my own writing. So yeah, I'm glad I came across this. And yeah, I appreciate your opinion on that. Moving on to our next link. Laura, you've got a quickie that you want to mention here.
Sure do.
Take us through it.
So this is just a really quick follow-up to what Gemma O'Brien was chatting about last week on the podcast. So last week, for anyone who hasn't listened, Gemma was talking about Melania Trump's Be Best logo that she designed herself, which we all had a good giggle over and a big discussion about. And I just wanted to follow up with, because since then, Meghan Markle has released her coat of arms. And Fast Company, one of our faves, Jeremy's absolute fave, have done an article that basically said Meghan Markle's coat of arms is the biggest design crime of 2018. Now, I don't know that I necessarily agree. I think
we're
Be Best. Yeah, I know, right? I think Be Best takes the cake, but it is kind of amusing. It's like, it's a kind of weird thing, and the idea of a coat of arms at all is, like, a weird thing. But there are just some bizarre elements to this, like you've got sort of the lion on the left, which is meant to represent Harry, and then the bird on the right, which is meant to represent Megan. And like the bird is sort of being strangled by this crown.
They both look in pain. Both look like they're in a lot of pain.
And then the lion has like red nail polish on.
What's that about?
It's super weird. And then I was reading some explanations of it. It was like the yellow lines on the left of the shield are meant to sort of signify the sun of California. And I'm like, really? It's like literally it's just a yellow line. Yeah, it's such a stretch. And it's just like such a weird, overly detailed coat of arms. What do you guys think?
It reminds me of like the Holden, like the old Holden logo when I first came to Australia.
Totally.
Which just looks like a lion driving a car, but it's actually supposed to be like a lion with his hand on a ball, but it just looks like a lion's like, I don't know what I'm doing here trying to drive this car.
You can see why they changed it.
but yeah, like, I don't know. The lion looks really uncomfortable. Like it should not be on its hind legs.
And the bird's like pushing away. Like
the bird is not into it.
Not into it at all. Anyway,
also,
pretty
amazing.
Also,
the bird is screaming. The bird is clearly screaming.
The bird is clearly screaming. They were saying it's meant to be sort of like a songbird, and it's also communicating with the people. But oh man, it's a bit of a blunder.
What's she communicating? Something scary.
But at least this has no real function in society.
Great commission for RJP though. I wonder who that illustrator is.
Yeah, where does it get used?
RJP? Exactly. Well, it's done by the Commission of Arms or something of arms that of Arms, I think it's called, and they have like artists that do it. That
so
do
like
all
some
of them.
Old guy?
It's some old guy, basically. It's some old guy.
Imagine if you got to do
but, yeah,
it.
Yeah, compared to the best thing that actually has to function as something in you know, real life space. I mean, this is pretty inoffensive.
I want to get our own coat of arms. It's like, you know, the ad agency Mother, they have their own tartan, like, you know, you can like kind of register like your own
we should totally get a coat of arms.
How do you guys not have a coat of arms? That feels insane.
You know what, that's a pretty good question,
Laura. We'll take this offline. Put them the two of this.
So my real link for today though is not the coat of arms. It's something that I found much more interesting, which is I want to talk about Boom. Yes. So for anyone who doesn't know Boom, that's thank you, Jeremy. So Boom is an absolutely brilliant website. It was launched 10 years ago now by Vancouver-based artist Jeff Hamada. And it's one of the largest art platforms on the internet. And it basically exists to highlight emerging talent in the contemporary art scene. And I have to say, it's one of the few websites that I check regularly, and I've like remained a really faithful fan of the site because of just how absolutely not wanky it is, which can be hard to find in the art world, and also just the sheer breadth of styles that it celebrates. I've discovered many of my favorite artists over the years through the site, and it's launched the international careers of many young artists. And I also had the pleasure of working with Jeff many years ago now on an event here in Melbourne, and I caught up with him recently when I was in Hawaii for Pow Wow. And it is just hard to think of anyone sort of more likable, humble, and genuinely invested in the art community than Jeff. So it's been a real pleasure to see his site thrive over the years. Sorry, Jeremy, you are also humble, invested in the community, etc. but look, what I want to talk about today is that in March of this year, Boom announced that they were introducing memberships for the first time. And I found this really interesting because I am fascinated by the ways that people find to fund their creative ventures. And Jeff himself wrote this really great post on the site when it was launched, explaining sort of what it means and why they were doing it. So just for some background, when Boom first started in 2008, Jeff was freelancing as a designer. He was living with his parents. He had this day job that paid the bills, and he worked at night on the blog as a hobby. And, you know, of course, like these things sort of do, I'm sure you two can relate, like it didn't take long for this blogging to become far more rewarding than the designing itself. And pretty soon after he decided to focus on it full time, it just completely exploded. Like Kanye had this blog at the time, and he was like reposting Boom content on the blog. And soon it was just, you know, the highest traffic art blog in Canada and one of the most prominent on the internet. And so now, of course, it's not just Jeff working out of his bedroom at his parents' place. There's a full team of talented people working alongside him. And together they've published over 12,000 articles. And, you know, although it has the same intentions as it did at the beginning, Boom is a very different creature now. It has a bigger platform and therefore bigger responsibilities. I just wanted to read some of what Jeff wrote, and he said, the internet is changing rapidly, and if we want to survive, we have to change too. You may have noticed many of your favorite publications becoming more and more like BuzzFeed-style news sites. Everywhere you look, memes and lists and clickbait content. The reason this is happening is a combination of publications relying on revenue from banner advertising to survive, site traffic equals money, and the fact that most people are consuming content through sites like Facebook. It's a scenario that gives social network news feeds and algorithms, which can be skewed by paying money, a lot of power to decide who succeeds and who fails, and which publications' articles are worthy of being seen and which aren't. It actually encourages and rewards publishers that promote clickbait content. Publishers playing this game ultimately lose their identity, and their once engaged readers become passive ones. We don't want to become another viral content site chasing likes and reach on social media to survive. While everyone is making their content more broad to bring in enough traffic to feed their banner advertising, we want to do the opposite. And he goes on and on and on about how he basically wants to really serve their core audience, their OG users. They want, you know, rather have like a few people who love it than a huge amount of people who kind of like it. And I love this. It's an attitude and a deeply considered approach that I appreciate so incredibly much. I mean, I'm sure you guys are the same. Like, I've seen so many outlets I love go down the drain thanks to what it takes to survive in this climate. And I believe that Boom are one of the few platforms in the very lucky position to take this sort of approach. And it makes me so happy that they've recognized this and acted on it. What do you guys think?
And that they're brave enough to do it.
Absolutely. Mm. You know, I should explain the memberships themselves. Yes. I mean, yeah, basically here's how it works. So there's no paywall or anything for their daily site content. All their existing articles continue to be free for everyone. What they're offering basically, and it's super clever, is these two membership options for those who want to either reap the benefits from the extensive community and the network that they have, or to simply support the site. So the first of those memberships is for artists, people who want an opportunity to submit work, get feedback on it. And I think the key realization here is that not only is Jeff's opinion highly regarded and, you know, therefore is he a valuable commodity in himself, but also he has access to this network of other talented creatives who are interested in engaging with each other and evaluating work. So for $5 a month or $50 for the year, artist members can publish work to the Boom submissions platform as often as they like for a chance to be selected for editorial features. And you're also eligible to apply for various creative grants and opportunities for commission. And then there are other things, of course, like, you know, exclusive content, discounts on products through their partners, whatever. But the main thing that I really love is that they've created this private Slack community for all members where you can receive like personal feedback on work, share ideas, ask questions, etc. I've actually been using it a lot over the last week or so since I became a member, and it's an incredible community. People are just really generous with their time, and Jeff himself responds to almost every post. And I think what's really clever as well is that Boom have recognized that their community isn't just made up of artists. There are others like myself who are appreciators and supporters of art and who still want to be actively involved in the community but have nothing to gain really from submissions or commissions. So for this membership, you can opt to pay like 20, 40, 60 or 100 bucks for the year. And you know that, I think, in itself recognizes that these people are treating it more as a donation rather than paying for a service. And you know, you get access to the Slack and stuff, but you know, it's just a bonus for those people. They just want to help Boom continue to do what they do. And I think what I love about this whole thing is they've considered really deeply how they can fulfill the goals of both making money to fund the company whilst also making sure that each membership is actually like a worthwhile experience that helps to further connect them to their community. And I don't know, is this something you guys would be interested in? Have you done anything similar? Have you seen anything similar?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think it's totally the concept behind this is something we've spoken a lot about before, which is I always talk about this, Kevin Kelly's 100 true fans, about like, you know, how any creative practice can survive if they have 100 or maybe they got up to 1,000 true fans. And I think this is, you know, a way to kind of put that in practice by making this paid kind of community. I think that it's something that needed Slack and Patreon and all these other kind of things to kind of exist, to kind of shift the tide and lower these kind of, lower the barriers of entry to creating these communities. I mean, I think, it's a natural extension of what the internet does and what it does best. I think that, I mean, there's a few things that concern me. I think like, look, one, I should also just kind of say, this is definitely something that we've been considering doing ourselves. And I'm hoping in the next kind of 3 or 4 weeks, we'll, you know, throw our own hat in the ring and put our own kind of twist on this that I've been really excited about. I think as someone who is part of a few different Slack groups, I feel that like every new Slack community kind of you add to that sidebar kind of creates like another kind of fracturing of attention, which we talk about a lot as well. And I kind of feel that especially when you get into a Slack group that has kind of hundreds, if not thousands of members, it can quickly become an actual community to just kind of another social media platform with a lot of noise.
Yeah, so, that's it. At the moment, it is relatively small,
which is great. So
it's quite intimate.
Yeah, you can get in on the ground floor and forge some great relationships. Like I don't know how the cost structure that they're putting forward, like to be kind of relevant, the number of people that would need to subscribe, it would have to be pretty substantial, from my opinion. So I'll be interested to see if it can kind of if it can be sustained on that level. But no, otherwise, I think it's a great thing, and I think it's also interesting to see how you know Boom and you know there was a few other of these kind of image aggregating kind of sites. I know that Found was a big one. you know, they those sites have been, a lot of them have been kind of shut down simply because of the same.
Well, Boom got big partly from appearing on Found, which is like, which is crazy. Now Found is, you know, gone.
I forgot about Found. I use it all the time.
It got lost.
Yeah.
But, Georgia, are you on any kind of private Slack groups?
You're not even on our Slack group, are you?
I feel like bad about that too. But again, Jeremy, what you just mentioned about, I just don't know how people have time. You know what I mean?
Like, I think this is very much for emerging artists.
Yeah, for
more
sure.
than it is for people with established art careers.
And that said, like, even when you sent me this link to Boom, I was like, oh shit, I haven't been on here for so long. But when I was like still studying or had recently graduated, I was obsessed with blogs like this and obsessed with Found.
Yeah.
And it's all I did, you know.
And that's the market, really.
For sure. So I totally think that if I was at that stage, like, this is something I would be so down with. But I'm already just trying to manage like Slack with three people in our office.
Yeah. Well, as I said, like, a lot of the reason I signed up is because I wanted to support it, but I don't know that I'll like stay an active member in the Slack community or anything, but I just wanted to support what Boom does because I love it. But I think there are young emerging artists that would find this kind of thing really useful.
And you could get a lot out of it for sure.
I think what I really love is that, like, it all comes back to, and I think this is something that's been really important for us in figuring out how we play out this kind of thing ourselves. It comes back to Boom's core reason for existing, which is, you know, a way to help emerging artists and shine a light on those that otherwise might have a hard time cracking into the industry. It supports Boom, but it also supports creatives, which is their sort of mission. You know, not that I can speak for them, but from what I can see. And I think that's really important. It makes it feel, for want of a better word after our conversation last week, authentic. Well, it seems genuine, and that's, I don't know. That's a nice thing. I hope it works.
Yeah, it's an alternative to getting, you know, to finding new revenue streams and finding the people who actually like your work to support you, not just kind of client work and commissions or ads. I think to that end, like, Georgia, you know, your practice is something that really was propelled by the internet in so many ways. Like, I mean, talking about the pins especially, that's kind of something that reached like public consciousness, went viral, and that kind of launched a whole kind of new career for you.
It did.
Is like, how do you, is that something that you kind of did deliberately, or have you kind of looked at any kind of alternative ways to harness the power of the internet to grow your career, or is it something that's just kind of, you let it happen?
It definitely just happened. It's, even making products at all was just like a side hustle. And it always was intended to just be like a bit of fun, something to do on the side of client work, set my own briefs, make some stuff. It's really satisfying to see something go from existing on a screen to existing real life. And I'd never really done that before. So it was just for myself. It just so happened that I was kind of starting to do it at a time where not that many people had done it. And my artwork and like my style had like translated really well to something really small and wearable. And so it was just like a fun experiment. And the internet kind of then just did its work, like, somehow.
Yeah, really ran with it.
Yeah. So we're really lucky. There's never in a million years I would have expected that products would become such a big part of my business as they have, or business, that I'd even be a business. You know, even saying that is weird. I studied graphic design. Like, I imagined sitting by myself in a room designing book covers for the rest of my life. I never imagined that I would have like staff members and stockists and be managing production and all this kind of crazy stuff, which is so fun. But yeah, I don't know if I had thought about it and tried to plan it. I don't think I ever would have done it.
I think that my favorite businesses, again, they feel kind of genuine and beautiful, and that like they didn't set out to be businesses or to make a ton of money. They set out to do a thing because they enjoyed it.
Totally.
And it ended up being successful.
Definitely.
Well, that's another thing that I found that is interesting about kind of Kickstarter culture and Boom as well. It's like, you know, I think they waited until they had already a big audience to do this thing. And I think, you know, you're seeing huge brands as well use Kickstarter to bypass their market testing, because basically they can put it on Kickstarter, see if there's a market, and then kind of go into production. So I think you're in a fortunate position now where you have a lot of followers, a lot of fans, a lot of retailers. Like, your kind of network in that area is really big. Have you kind of thought about, I know there's, you're kind of considering lots of kind of changes and new things to your own business. Have you thought about harnessing that in kind of a similar way at all?
Not really, because I don't know how, you know, and I feel like I should. I'm already getting scared about the internet going away, about Instagram going away. And I am thinking, starting for the first time, to think about the future and how do I retroactively now go back and ensure that now we've built this accidental business, how do we maintain its profitability? How do we make it, keep it being fun and useful and paying our wages and whatever? So
all these questions you sort of never thought you'd have to
ask yourself.
Yeah,
because I always thought it would be just me too, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I only have like two or three people that work with me, but Even that is crazy.
Well, maybe it's time that you get yourself a
paywall.
I was gonna say a VR or AR influencer to help.
Oh my
your
gosh!
Products,
good
which
segue,
is
Jeremy.
A nice segue.
Nailed it. Yeah, nailed it.
Into your link, Georgia. Tell us a bit about this. You got a three pronged attack over here with three different links, but all kind of going to the uncanny valley.
So off the bat, I know nothing about AI. I know nothing about technology. I've just gotten hooked into this because I'm obsessed with like pop culture and Instagram, which is how I stumbled upon Michaela. Had you guys seen Michaela before?
Well, little Michaela has been on the podcast before.
Are you insane?
Not little Michaela.
Oh my God.
Jeremy, you phrased that so badly.
It was
I brought her
true.
Up like a year ago when it first sort of, I don't know, it was like she'd sort of surfaced and there wasn't that much information about it. So it's like, I'm really excited to talk about her more today because there's so much more about her now.
Okay. So I don't know if you were like I was, but you just like mindlessly scrolling Instagram as you do, scrolling past like, and in the recommended stuff you may like page or whatever.
I think that's exactly what happened to me. Yeah. I think that's how I found her.
Yeah. And then I saw this girl and then I was like, oh my God, I need to know about her skincare. How does she look so perfect?
That's exactly what I did.
Okay. I'm so glad. I was hooked. I was just like, who is... And then literally I went onto her page and then it took me so long. Well, okay, not that long, but a while to realize something was off here. Something's not quite right. But I couldn't work out what I actually said to people. Like, is she she's real. She's not real. Is she real?
For anyone who doesn't know what we're talking about, Lil Michaela is this Instagram star who has been sort of a bit controversial, very interesting. She's basically an avatar. She's completely computer generated.
Totally.
But she lives a very real life.
It's so
real. In a way that's bizarre. She has this whole persona and she sort of has, she poses in photos with other celebrity friends.
And other real humans. That's where it gets freaky, you know, because it's like that like hyper real. She's in real scenarios. She's talking about current events. She's talking about like Black Lives Matter and like the weather and like stuff that brings her into the real world. But she's completely computer generated.
Yeah. And I think like stunts like this have sort of been done before. But the thing that separates this from anything else is that like, people have really latched onto it and people follow her as though she's a real
And she's a style
person.
Icon.
And so she's been around for 2 years and only around a week ago, there was a kind of long, I guess, feature article about her on The Cut. Actually, the second piece from The Cut. Where does The Cut come from?
I know.
Do you know?
I don't know, but I'm enjoying the writing a lot.
Yeah, me too.
But what is this piece about exactly?
So basically it's talking about Michaela, how she now has 1.1 million followers.
Jesus Christ.
And also, where is this going? It's like the divide between real and fake and what makes someone real online. Like, how is Michaela any more fake than like a Kardashian or Kylie Jenner? It's like they're humans becoming fake almost. And Michaela is like fake becoming real. It's like just becoming very blurry. And also, there's so much that goes along with this. It's like impossible beauty standards.
Mm.
It's like now these teenagers are idolizing someone who they can literally never be.
This computer thing that doesn't age, doesn't get sun damage, doesn't, you know,
even though on her feet,
get hungry.
She's talking about, oh, it's hot out here. I'm having an iced matcha latte, whatever. It's like, it's so blurry. I can't imagine what it must be like to be 18. Well, you go on any of her posts actually, and there are people arguing constantly about, she's real. She's fake. Like a lot of people still think she's real.
And do we know who is behind it?
Yes. So it's like an
LA. We didn't when we last spoke about it. There was no one knew at that stage. That's why I found this
Was
really
that on purpose? Were they like secretly?
Oh yeah, it was a secret. And then this whole thing has happened where they talk about in the article this like her account got hacked by like a right wing.
Like a pro-Trump avatar. So now we have like avatar
by an avatar
wars.
As well. Yeah.
Yeah. AI wars. It's getting scary.
Yeah. And then the pro-Trump avatar like wouldn't give the account back until Lil Michaela promised to tell people the truth. But, you know, people do think that it was sort of a stunt by the people who actually run
and that
the
hasn't
account.
Been, yeah, that hasn't even been verified. Like we don't know.
There's
if it's
so many conspiracy theories.
Because that's pretty insane. Like these guys that, okay, so Michaela was created by this, I guess they call themselves, what do they call themselves?
Brood,
problem
brud?
Solvers. Brud? Brood? I don't know how to pronounce it. Some LA-based agency of sorts, and they call themselves dreamers, thinkers, doers, problem solvers. I don't know what problem Michaela is solving exactly, but I don't know. I'm here for it. I'm really interested.
Yeah, and
I'm,
they're engineers who like specialize in AI and robotics and stuff.
Yeah, that's their jam. But they look like normal people. Like on their website now, you can see them. And I was expecting some kind of scary Oz-like puppet master, you know. But I don't know. They just seem like normal dudes. And I think they're just having a lot of fun experimenting with how far they can go.
There are so many theories. The one I loved that they brought up is that, like, apparently a lot of LA techies sort of believe in, is that their plan is to sort of eventually move Michaela from Instagram to their own sort of built social network where anyone with an iPhone can sort of create, dress, promote their own personal CGI model, which I hadn't actually thought about, but it makes perfect sense that a platform like that would exist.
Like, it's like Bitmoji, but just extra Bitmoji.
Just like hyper real Bitmoji.
How does this relate to the Uncanny Valley? This is another article, Georgia, that you kind of brought up kind of as a, you know, as a companion to this piece. This is from The Guardian.
So I've only recently found out about the concept of Uncanny Valley. And I think it's such a great term, but it's described as being the dip in our emotional response when we as humans encounter something that's almost but not quite human. So they've done a lot of research in this in Japan, like with developing robots and all the AI kind of technology that I know nothing about. And I'm completely not equipped to talk about articulately. But it's just that vibe you get when you look at something that's robotic or a weird lifelike doll that feels very close to being human, but it's not quite. And Uncanny Valley is the point where those two kind of boundaries get crossed, like something going from being one category to another, and in this case, from non-human to human or vice versa.
Yeah, and it seems to be that, like, studies sort of show that the more human-like they get, we sort of find them more appealing until a point.
Exactly.
And then when they get almost real, like, just to adjacent to realistic, you know, then we find it really
the most
creepy. I guess there's many reasons why that would be, and I would have my own personal ones, but yeah, and then again, I guess obviously once it comes out of that valley and gets completely realistic, then we're fine with it again.
It's that very fine point where those two things cross over, which I'm so fascinated in, because that's it. I like weird, creepy stuff on the internet. And I just feel like this, like, captures all of that, because I know that feeling when you get creeped out and you feel kind of sick, but you're like, do I trust this thing? Like, and that's really,
Michaela is like the perfect embodiment of that whole thing.
Right. Yeah. And when I saw those two articles,
I'm all for her though. Like, I love her.
A big part of your brand, Georgia, is working with some influencers, like, you know, who are wearing your products or, you know, showcasing in that way. Is that something that you kind of actively pursue, or does it just happen? And if you had the opportunity to work with little Michaela in that way, would you go for it?
Oh my God, totally. Yeah. I don't know. I personally, I don't really enjoy, like, unboxings and, like, sending products to people. Like, I feel really dirty doing that kind of stuff. But I've been quite lucky. Like, I have a few really cool people that I've sent product to just as, like, a gift, like, with no pressure of, like, wear this or whatever. But I feel like this kind of AI, like,
you mean Jeremy and I, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Oh, that's an interesting thing. Like, I wonder, like, you know, you're thinking about the future. It's like, would you, as a designer, like, could you kind of create 3D versions of your work and then, like, send that as, like, a 3D model, like, to a 3D influencer, and they could kind of wear it?
Well, they're doing it now. So Michaela's already been in campaigns for, like, Chanel, Fendi, and then also smaller, like, not indie brands, but smaller brands.
But wearing the real product?
Wearing the real product.
Right, right.
So it kind of almost looks like her face is the most kind of CGI.
Yeah, I think
her body.
It looks to me like her face is often, like, comped onto
a photograph, body, maybe?
But they're really guarded about how they do it. They don't release any information about how any of it works.
I'd die for a behind the scenes.
Oh my God,
like,
fucking,
you know, the
for
making
it.
Of Michaela.
They've got now, like, her sort of male counterpart.
Yeah, which I saw.
Who has, like, not very many followers. He's kind of hot. It's the whole thing's so weird. Like,
that's the thing.
So
that's Uncanny Valley. Like, yeah. I've got another amazing video I'm going to show you guys as well with this, like, robot who's, like, kind of hot, and it's like, it just makes you feel yeah, I don't know, some kind of way that is not right, but we're going to probably all be feeling a lot more as we move into the future.
Speaking of it, what's the last link that you kind of wanted to round this out with about Google's artificial brain? How does this relate these things?
So that's kind of another level. So that's, again, I don't know a lot about tech, but I'm into this because of the implications it could have for our industry. Like, it's really clear. So they're working with all of these insane computers that have neural networks. Like, it's the same way that Google works now. It's the same way that Facebook is able to identify yourself or your friends in a photo. It puts together data and images. And so now they're kind of retroactively using that to use the computer's neural networks to create artwork from scratch. Well, artwork, you know, in quotes. And
from scratch, and I mean, it kind of uses the data that's inputted, but in the same way that we do, I guess.
Completely.
Yeah.
And so it's about the computer making its own connections and these limitless combinations of words and images to create these really insane pieces of art.
Yeah, look, this is a piece from 2 years ago. I still think it's kind of really relevant, and I think it's important for, I really think it's important for anyone who is a visual artist to be aware of this, because one thing I always kind of talk about is that, you know, photography really kind of was in a crisis professionally, like when stock came around and when iPhones came out as well. And I think that the stuff that I've seen that AI can produce, like art-wise, is pretty scary, like especially the Google Draw stuff, where, you know, you could just kind of draw a sketch of something and it would kind of pop out a beautiful vector icon of it. Or
yeah. And it's got some ways to go, but I mean, there's no doubt that it will get there.
It's got some ways to go, totally. But I think if you, you know, you're going to get caught by surprise if you're not kind of aware of how you could potentially work this into your practice, or where you need to steer your practice to ensure that you're kind of protecting it. I mean, just to, in summary, Georgia, like you mentioned, you're thinking a lot about the future. Like, is there any kind of, you know, cutting edge tech or anything that you're kind of considering working into your own practice, or that you're most kind of curious about at the moment?
Not at all. That's the thing. Like, I'm so unprepared for the robot takeover. I'm so naive when it comes to that stuff. And I'm one of the people that you would think, oh, I'm safe. My industry's safe. No one can kind of mimic the human hand. No one can, you know, interpret things the way that I do. But clearly they're going to be able to. I haven't given enough thought for this at all.
I think you're good for now. Your work is incredible.
You know what I mean? It's like it's going to go somewhere, but how far does it go?
Yeah, well, I think like the key thing to remember as well is that, like, is no matter how much it feels like it, the opposite, this, yeah, she's an avatar, she's CG created, but she's not conscious. It's not a conscious AI machine in any way. There are people behind her who are still writing all of her stuff, coming up with her look, designing her posts, etc. So the only person that is not involved in this is the human influence themselves. Everything else is still being run by a team of people in the same way that it would be.
For now.
Yeah, right. For now, completely.
With that, we will move on. We will post all of these links to our show notes, which we put out at jackiewinter.givesyouthe.biz. You can sign up to our podcast-specific newsletter every week as well at tinyletter.com/jackiewinter. Moving on to our final segment, we're going to close off like we're trying to do every week with our hashtag having a whinge feature. We come up and whinge about something. Laura, what's your whinge for the week?
I'd like to whinge about youths. Can I whinge about youths?
Me?
Youths, not you.
Oh.
Youths. Youths all.
Some youths graffitied on my lovely house. And
Sexco,
I don't even,
Mexico.
No, that would be great. Sexco, Mexico is a graffiti. We had a graffiti. Really, I sound like an old person. A graffiti that we had around the corner from our old office, which that people blamed me for, but it was not me. My personal favorite was Cactus Dong, that was also near our office.
Someone wrote that?
Mm-hmm. Very good.
So good.
But no, someone scrawled something that doesn't even mean anything. And then my landlord has sort of tried to wash it off, but hasn't. So it's just now this like blur of white paint on our black like outside wall. And anyway, youths. I'm shaking my fist. Get off my lawn. God.
Yeah, someone tagged just the word karate like really badly, like just on the building like outside in Eastern. It just looks like a really dodgy way to get kids to come into a shop front.
But oh god.
Yeah, it's just a really bad day.
Well, I got annoyed at Dan on that. We just went to Tasmania over the weekend, and at the start of the flight home, I don't know why, but I asked him, I was like, if you had to pick a tag, like you had to, like what would it be? And he just like wouldn't play the game with me. What would your guys' tags be? Like, it's a big question.
I don't know, because you want to remain anonymous, but
no, I mean, GPEZ, like that would have to be yours.
Then everyone will know who I am.
That's the whole fucking point, right?
Yeah, I can play,
build your street rep.
It would probably be GPEZ.
Jeremy?
KRS-One.
You're not KRS-One.
Says who?
Jeremy, what are you whinging about this week?
Well, before I can go into my whinge, I need to make sure you understand my new privacy policy.
Guys.
Fucking hell. I think there's so many good there's so many good GDPR memes. My favorite is with the Pennywise one where he's like, you know, in it's like sign our new privacy policy.
Oh god.
But like, yeah, like I've gotten so many of these emails, and they're just like EULAs, you know. It's like at a certain point it reaches a saturation point where you just kind of have to click it. And also like for us to prepare for it as well and to do what we need to do, I'm like, I feel like it just came out of nowhere.
Totally. But I don't understand, like some of them you had to click a thing, and a lot of them they just told you stuff. So yeah. It's like, so clearly one of them just told me stuff, I was like, fine, I just archive it. But if I had to click a thing, there's like so many things I'm probably unsubscribed to now.
I know. I feel, and yeah.
Might be a good
thing. Are we meant to do that? If I missed the...
Again, it's a thing.
We were like, the government would have told us. Someone would have told us. It's fine. That's what we said.
Anyway, that's my first whinge. My second whinge relates to this ball that I'm holding, which is this
I noticed
this
that.
Really cool kind of squishy ball that is green. And then
it's like that shit that's all over Instagram. Yeah. I love it.
Well, oh, those.
Well, yeah. So it relates to Instagram where it's like, so do you guys know the account like Business Insider? And they have all those other things like Design Insider. Mm-hmm. Anyway, while I was like recovering from my surgery, I spent like about like a week just scrolling through the whole back catalog of Design Insider kind of posts, which are really kind of great. And now like it was like one of like the only like big accounts that I kind of subscribe to on Instagram, and their story has all their kind of features, and most of them are really cool, but one story every day has to do with the video of popping a blackhead or a whitehead.
Oh, I love which, that shit.
Dude. No, that belongs
Dr.
nowhere.
Dr. Pimple Popper? No, anyone on that? Dr.
No,
Pimple Popper.
I think that content belongs nowhere in the Design.
It's very strange that it's on Design Insider.
That's not appropriate.
It like, is completely inappropriate. Yeah. It's so bizarre. It's like, you know, here are like, you know, three things you should never do before you're 30, or like, you know, or I got to learn about like the budget of the royal family, which I thought was really interesting, or how certain things are made. I don't want whitehead popping in that content.
Yeah,
at
I,
all.
I go to specific channels to get that content.
Do you, exactly. Are you like a Dr. Pimple Popper?
Only like not often, but I sometimes like once every 6 months I get into like, I just get into that mood where like I need to see some like shit being squeezed out of someone's back.
God.
I don't think I've ever said those words. No. I'm super into the slime videos though on Instagram. I'm such a sucker for that. Yeah. And like people doing stuff with paint and like smudging. There's some kind of
The
like
paint
Freudian.
Things we've talked about those
happening.
Before.
Do you like baths? Have you seen the slime bath stuff? Like you can get it at like toy stores. It's like
what you put in the bath.
You put in the bath and turn your bath into slime.
Oh my god!
How do you clean that up?
Do you put your kid in that after?
Yeah. We got one from Winterfed. It was so gross. Never doing it again.
Are you sure it's not like? It feels carcinogenic.
Yeah.
I'm scary.
Oh, okay. I think we're done. Thank you so much, Georgia. Where can people find out more about you, about your work, about everything GPEZ related, apart from your tags all over Collingwood?
Cool. Hit me on the DMs at GPEZ on Instagram, or you can find me at georgiaperry.com.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Laura.
Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you, Georgia.
Thank you, guys.
This has been Jackie Winter Gives You the Business. Jackie Winter Gives You the Business is a weekly podcast about creative project management and production and just making things happen in general, as well as whiteheads, popping blackheads, and all that other gross stuff. Our producer is Areej Norm. You can find the Jackie Winter Group on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, etc. at Jackie Winter. That's Jackie with a Y and Winter like the season. And you can email us with any recommendations, feedback, questions, or comments at podcast@jackiewinter.com. We are also now on Stitcher and Spotify as well, if that's your thing. To receive all the links that we talk about on the show each week in one neat little email, you can sign up to our podcast newsletter at tinyletter.com/JackieWinter, and archives of all of our shows and show notes can be found at jackiewinter.givesyouthe.biz. Our theme music is by Melbourne-based musician Jackie Winter. You can check out his stuff on soundcloud.com/JackieWinter. If you love what you hear, you can help us out by subscribing on iTunes, rate us, and comment. It helps more people find the show. Details, again, on our website at jackiewinter.givesyouthe.biz. Thank you for listening. Catch you next week. Bye. Just bye. That's it for today. A little bye. Bye.